Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Tata Motors Q4 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. During the course of presentation, if any participant intends to ask questions, they can use the chat box option appearing at the bottom of the screen to submit their questions to the speakers. All questions will be taken up at the end of the session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Prakash Pandey from Tata Motors. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everyone. Hope all of you and your family members are healthy and safe during these uncertain and unprecedented times. On behalf of Tata Motors, I warmly welcome you all for our Q4 FY21 results conference call. Today, we have with us Mr. Gunter Buschek, MD and CEO, Tata Motors, Mr. Thierry Bolloré, CEO, Jaguar Land Rover, Mr. P.B. Balaji, Group CFO, Tata Motors, Mr. Adrian Mardell, CFO, Jaguar Land Rover, Mr. Girish Wagh, President, Commercial Vehicle Business, Mr. Shailesh Chandra, President, Passenger Vehicle and Electric Vehicle Business, and my other colleagues from the investor relations team. Like always, we will start the session with a quick overview of the financial and business performance from the management, and then followed by Q&A. Over to you, Balaji.
Thank you. Thanks, Prakash. Just a warm welcome to all of you. Thanks for taking the time. As Prakash said earlier, I hope all of you are safe and sound. The presentation has already been uploaded into the investor portal, and therefore I'm presuming all of you had a chance to take a look at it and also have it in front of you. We'll refer to the page numbers and move forward with speed. Can we have the next slide, please? This is a safe harbor statement. Moving to the next one. Yeah. An intense period of product actions as well as company actions that you saw in Jaguar Land Rover. Defender, of course, we're going to talk a lot about Defender today, winning the World Car Design of the Year. And now almost 12 out of 13 are placed on electrified. And you were there when the reimagined strategy and the refocused transformation was announced, and we'll talk about that later as well. We'll be concluding Charge in this quarter, which has generated 6 billion pounds of lifetime savings, one of the most successful projects in the automotive world, and I'm very happy with that. Next slide, please. In Tata Motors, of course, we did see significant product interventions post-BS6, and at this point in time, what is really happening is customers starting to experience the product and really giving us excellent feedback, which is now reflected in our market shares, particularly in M&HCV and ILCV. Tata Safari, the legend, was reborn. Of course, it's strong response to the market, and PV has been a standout performer, which Shailesh is going to talk about even more. And the cost-saving target, we had indicated 6,000 crores for the year. We ended up at 9,300 crores, a strong performance there as well. And the promoters have completed their funding. The remaining outstanding warrants have been exercised. Next slide. From a performance perspective for the quarter, a strong all-round performance despite the pandemic, if you look at the full year. Full year EBITDA of almost 30,000 crores. But if I look at closer home into Q4, the EBIT numbers that you see of 7.3% is the highest rate we have seen in many quarters. We ended the year with a strong cash flow for the quarter as well as for the year being a positive free cash flow. And overall, EBITDA margins have picked up. And if you look at the full year number, EBITDA has improved despite a decline in revenue or a volume increase, which tells you that the business is getting intrinsically more stronger. And the implication of a strong business, what does it do when revenues come through, is seen in Q4. That's how we'd like to see the business today. Move forward. The numbers are there for the C, but call out the net automotive debt. We've called out the deleverage plan when we announced it in the AGM. Happy to report that for the current year, we are lower than what we were closing debt of last year, and every quarter we've been reducing our net debt level. And that is something which we are quite happy about. Next slide. What are the three things that actually which are a bit different to the rest of the flow, which is a traditional P&L analysis? First is JLR, where we called out the reimagined-led changes that we are doing to our strategy, resulting in a one-time non-cash write-down of 0.95 billion and a restructuring cost of about 0.6 billion. And this will impact us in FY22, but even then we'll deliver a break-even cash flow. But this is an important pivot that we have done to the business, and therefore these write-downs that we have taken will actually help us from a strategy perspective to go fully into the electrification mode. And Thierry and Adrian are going to talk more about it. This will also give us a credit going forward in terms of lower D&A charge of 150 million per annum, and also the headcount savings. We are looking at about 2,000 odd headcount. That will result in savings of close to about 100 million per annum. Despite these write-downs, the network continues to be strong at 5.3 billion. So that is the first one of the exceptional items. In the case of TMLTV, this is sweet news, where the strong performance of the business is a significant improvement, even well ahead of our own internal expectations, and the outlook remaining strong thanks to the pandemic and our performance both together. We have reversed the impairment that we have taken same period last year of 1,200 crores. We also had an onerous contract provision for volume from one of the vendors. That has also been reversed, and therefore this business is now well and truly performing to the extent that we want. And, of course, more to be achieved as well. PV subsidiarization, we had the shareholders meeting as well as the secure creditors meeting and got approval for that. We are awaiting the final NCLT approval, which is now scheduled on June 14th, and we are hoping to get the approval from there, and promoters have already talked about. So just let me hand it over to Adrian to quickly run us through the key highlights of JLR performance. Adrian, over to you.
Many thanks, Balaji. Good afternoon, evening to you all on the call. So same format for us, exactly as Balaji said. First half was the weak half, and we had a strong second half performance, particularly in Q4. Can everybody hear me? Particularly in Q4. Thank you. The 7.5% you see there, EBIT in Q4 was mostly and overwhelmingly underlying performance. So really pleased with that. You see the PBT, 500 million, and the big free cash flow as well, 729 million pounds. Four-year results on the right, but you can see dramatic improvement to the previous year, even though FY20 was impacted partially in quarter four, if you recall. Next slide, please. Okay, so these are the headlines below that. We'll get into revenue details later in the presentation. Balaji has talked about the exceptional item, and we'll go through the walks on cash flow as we normally do. Next slide, please. Any points I want to make on exceptionals, because I don't want to repeat what Balaji said, was look, our assessment at the end of the year was very close to the preliminary assessment we made on February the 26th, £1.5 billion. And just to remind you, you know, those products, MLA Mid, did not fit in to the Reimagine strategy. Now, they would not leapfrog competition, and we're all about being the best of the best, not just competing. So that's why we took the really difficult and emotional decision to cancel those programs. We are still working through the restructuring costs beyond the headcount, 2,000 people. And that's mostly about, you know, getting the right positions and the right people into the organization with the right skill sets. Less management grades, you know, more people with specialist skills, which is fundamental to success in this environment. Next slide, please. Okay, a busy one, but we wanted to show you several flavors of the retail data. Quarter four at the top, 4 year below. Look, you can see the highlights and study it in your own time, but a dramatic quarter-over-quarter improvement on China, you know, in part because Q4, FY20, of course, COVID hit China first and therefore was impacted negatively, but nice year-over-year performance in North America as well, particularly in Q4. And the other regions are starting to build back. They were limited impact, of course, last year, but they are starting now to build back with a huge order demand we have at this point in time, almost 100,000 customers waiting to drive our vehicles. So very, very healthy order bank going into quarter one. Next slide, please. And this is it by family. Don't forget, we talk a lot about health of sale, quality of sale, and we're playing this back by sales family. Range Rovers versus last year were a little bit higher. Obviously, China is a good piece of that. Take a look at the Defender data. Balaji said we would talk Defender there a little bit. 17,000 units in Q4, our highest quarter so far. We talked to you several times about 5,000 units a month. We have surpassed that already. Other data sets for you to focus on this page, 62% of our vehicles were electrified in one form or the other, pure BEV, BEV due to MHEV. So the pure ICE vehicle content is reducing quarter by quarter, and that trend will continue, particularly now we brought out 21 modular PHEV vehicles. That will continue going forward. More of our vehicles will be electrified going forward. Next slide, please. Okay, Defender, look, oh, this is really dramatic. I talked about 100,000 orders overall for our families of cars, more than 22,000 orders now for the Defender family. You see the uptick here towards the right-hand side as our Defender 90 came on stream at the end of last year. And the solid line there, that is the retail data, 7,000 cars in March. So we talked about 5,000 a month. We can now start talking about 6,000 to 7,000 units a month as that supply comes on. World Car Design of the Year, you'd have seen that. Last one we got announced was Women's World Car of the Year. So this is definitely a vehicle that actually gets appeal across all the spectrums and all the genders. It is a brilliant indication of what this organization can and does do. This is the best of the best, and that's what we aspire for. Next slide, please. Okay, so, you know, you talk to us a lot about shares, so we've added this page, this point. A few things to draw out. Shares growing quarter over quarter, but particularly growing stronger in those families which we are focusing most on, Range Rovers and Defender. That's health of sale, quality of sale. We're not competing on total units. We're competing on overall profitability, and this is shown, I think, perfectly by this page. Overall, though, you can see in total our share has grown from 4.4% at the start of the fiscal year to 6% at the end of the fiscal year. And again, that's mostly around that Defender family and the growth you there see in the Range Rover. Next slide, please. So our traditional walks on profitability, I'm just going to draw out a few themes here. This one is quarter four. Last year, of course, we recorded a big loss. Some of that was as a result of those COVID provisions, variable marketing provisions we put in place as the second-hand vehicle market collapsed at the end of that year. And this year, the $534 million. Things to draw out. We talk about health of sale, quality of sale. You can see a huge increase in mix actually there within the volume of mix, almost £200 million within the quarter. And dramatic data on variable marketing. The other thing about health of sale is, of course, you cannot oversupply to the marketplace. We haven't been oversupplying, and our variable marketing is substantially improved because of that. Almost half of that last year number was as a result of the reserves we put in place. But I've talked to you several times about VME less than 7%. Our underlying number dropped to 4.9% in Q4 with the headline number at 4.4% eliminating reserve adjustments. The other one I wanted to talk about and call out is warranty. Again, we've talked to you about this almost every quarter. We've been very transparent and very clear about what our intention is and what's likely to happen. And you're seeing it in the data here, right? 20 model year vehicles are substantially better than previous model years. We said they'd mature at the end of Q3 and into Q4. And we said our warranty as a proportion of gross vehicle revenue would drop below 4% towards 3.5%, slightly under that 3.4%. And I won't repeat all the other pieces, but there was a big favorable year-on-year on exchange. Sterling depreciated last year, which meant our euro-denominated liabilities and our dollar and euro-denominated debt was more expensive in sterling. That gave us bad news last year. The other way, sterling depreciated post-Brexit, again, as we said it would. and that's given us that optical improvement on revaluation. But great work by the treasury team in terms of the hedging levels we've had, both on commodities and on currencies, which, of course, have helped as well. Next slide, please. Four-year performance, I'd write different things on this one. Volume, significantly lower year over year, 120,000 units, down 1.2 billion. But, of course, you know, that mix improvement has partially offset that. You can see the four-year numbers for VME and for warranty. Want you to draw out the engineering DNA here. We talk about this one a lot as well, and we did say to you the capitalized engineering would start to fall as our programs mature. And you can see here, really, for the first time, the amount of capitalization is lower than our amount of amortization. That means we're de-supplementing the balance sheet on these programs. And you will see in the backup data substantially less capitalization, particularly, you know, over these last few quarters versus previous years. And that trend will continue, we believe. And then the four-year exchange, full-year evaluation of the items I mentioned earlier on revaluation on hedges and on commodities. Next slide, please. Okay, cash, look at the middle box. Again, I've been asking you to look at the middle box for the last several quarters. You can see how dramatic our underlying cash position is. Almost £1 billion generated. Investment now within that £2.5 billion range. More than £400 million in the quarter. And we did reverse our working capital losses of quarter one as we went through the year. So that was behind the £700 million cash flow in the quarter. Next slide, please. Investment, £2.5 billion was the guidance. No, we said £600 million a quarter broadly. We came in a bit lower than that. Our guidance for next year is £2.5 billion or so. I think it's reasonable for you to assume the plus or minus £100 million over the next years, depending on where those investments finally get deployed and crystallized. But we were lower than the target for this year. £2.5 billion stays in place going forward. Next slide. Charge. But as you said, we've now finished the program. We did exactly, again, what we committed to do, right? So this is becoming a theme from us. We make commitments and we deliver on those commitments. We said in April we would generate £2.5 billion this year and that would take the program up to £6 billion. We did, and it has. You know, in summary for the program, over 2.5 years, we took £1 billion out of inventory. We took almost £3 billion out of investment. You know, latterly measured on a year-over-year basis, not the notional start point which we started off with, and we took £2.1 billion out of several areas of cost, strategic costs, the Sapphire program, all the things we taught you about previously. So again, we did what we said we were going to do. The program's closed, but the power of the program lives on through Refocus, which has substantially expanded the scope of the program as well. More in later slides. Next slide, please. Okay, so I introduced this slide to you at the Investor Day. I won't repeat it all like I did then, but this is quite dramatic what the program's done. We've effectively reset the investment and the structural cost base 8 years now. Go to the first column, break-even volumes, 425,000 units in FY14. We wholesale 471, significantly cash generative. But we invested and we brought more structure in and more people in right through to the start of the charge program in FY19. Our break-even cash position was 600,000 units at that point. And even though in that year we had a wholesale number of the highest in our history, we lost substantial cash. Charge started to bring that down pre-COVID to 500,000. Obviously had a dramatic year in the year of COVID, as you'd expect. Artificially low, including some furlough money there. But the big point here is we now know we've restructured and we've rebalanced to 400,000 units. So we've reset this organization 8 years. And that's before the power of the Reimagine and the Refocus programs kick in fully. Next slide. Okay, saying it a different way, first three quarters before the program, 2.7 billion cash loss. Last three quarters of the program, 1.7 billion cash gain. since charge started, net cash gain is almost £1 billion. So that's quite a dramatic turnaround, as Balaji has mentioned. Next slide. Okay, so those are the core finance slides. I quickly go on to the business update slides. This is the same as last time. Our electrified portfolio is now in the marketplace. Next slide. Okay, reimagine strategy. Look, we took you through an almost 2 hours worth of detail on February the 26th on reimagine. So I'm literally going to just hit a few highlights. Reimagine's there fundamentally to fix the problems we've designed within this organization. So the first thing clearly that comes out from Reimagine is we need to make Jaguar great again. The power of that brand deserves to be great, and that's our intention to actually do that. We'll be a copy of nothing. Upgrade into modern luxury. So an intent repositioning of this brand with luxury materials, as well as obviously a luxury external design. All of that is in process. We made a lot of progress over the last few months. We'll bring those details to you going forward. All BEV Jaguar will be from 2025, let me remind you. And Land Rover will have its first full all BEV from 2024 onwards. Our estimation is about 20% of our sales will be all BEV by 2026, with a commitment for tailpipe zero by 2036. That's the intention and the commitments we made on February 26. They will not change going forward. Next slide, please. So how are we going to do it? Well, obviously, the first thing we're going to do is consolidate our architectures, six architectures down to three, and most importantly, two a Land Rover, one Jaguar. That will enable us to design those brand personalities specific to those two brands. No compromise here. No compromise. So the freedom of the design and the engineering authority discreetly within those brands, that's something that other organizations and other OEMs don't do as well as we can do. This is a competitive advantage for us, and we are not going to give up that competitive advantage. Increased collaboration, particularly with our group, with Tata. Announcements will be made on that forthcoming, not today, but forthcoming. Very excited about the speed of consolidation and synergy within the broader empire, and also working with external people collaborating to get the best. We want to be the best of the best, therefore you have to work with the best to enable and to actually do that. And please don't underestimate how many of those companies want to work with us. We are a brilliant profile company for them to wish to work for as well. So we're very excited about the collaborations we will be able to make in the foreseeable future. And again, when we're ready to announce those, you will hear about it at that point in time. But we will also take on the other challenges we've created for ourselves. Excess capacity. This is our production facilities. Obviously, we announced on February the 26th our intention to consolidate our nameplates within facilities, and also to repurpose the Castle Bromwich site after we finish building the current range of Jaguar vehicles there. So that's what we intend to do, but under that modern luxury by design banner. That's what you should judge us by. Next slide, please. Okay, mechanism. How are we going to do it? That's the refocus program. Exactly as we told you before, six pillars, three enablers across all of those pillars. Next slide. Let me draw out some of it, because obviously each time we talk to you, we need to build on it a little bit. I'm going to talk about one of the pillars that wasn't a focus of charge. This is pillar two. This is program delivery. And this is where we're really tying in the pillars, the item seven enabler, agile working. We've introduced some agile specialists. We're bringing on agile people to add to our workforce. We're rolling this out, particularly within the engineering fraternity. We've already started with hundreds of teams, and we will have thousands of people working in those scrums, those sprints, empowered to fix the problems that we have over the course of the next 6 to 9 months. What do we expect? We expect to significantly speed up our time to market. You can see there what we're actually committing to, a 40% improvement. And we also expect to improve customer satisfaction. Why? Because the input into the engineers and designers are coming from several different sources into the individual groups, and obviously the engagement of those workforce and the speeding up will actually improve the quality of the engineered solution. And as a result of which, we will spend less. Less time means less. Less rework means less. Less iteration means less spend. So we expect a 30% reduction in spend, which of course will also help deliver those investment targets. The center one, customer and market performance. We talked to you in some detail about this 2 years ago, particularly to the US market, but we've significantly scaled this now. Under that, in digital side of Refocus, where we brought our analytics team and our robotics teams together with data solutions to the problems we have in the marketplace. We've also scaled our intention here. So 2 years ago, I talked about national sales company work. This is working directly with the dealers. And you can see there, again, the commitments that we're making through that analytics solutions and making sure we're providing the right cars to the right market at the right time with the right specifications. They sell quicker and there's less marketing support around it. We've already proven this out. This is a scaling of those ideas. Very excited about Pillar 5. And everything that isn't embedded elsewhere from Charge goes into Pillar 9. So, you know, the 2,000 people coming out of the organization was the first decision we made. But we'll continue our work, obviously, in terms of real estate consolidation post-COVID. And a lot of the other side of InDigital, the robotics team, is starting to help our teams become more efficient, taking administrative roles out, replacing with robots. So very, very excited about the scaling up of the program in terms of Refocus. And a fast start here, right? We've got the momentum of all the whole Charge program into Refocus, which is why we're committing to £1 billion value in FY22 off this program. Next slide. Still problems out there, of course. You know, none of us will rest until the planet's vaccinated against COVID. We know that. The speed to electrification is enhancing. Therefore, we need to make sure that we speed up as well. Pillar 2, Agile is part of that. And of course, you know, there are supply concerns, particularly as a result of the semiconductor post-COVID and also the fire in Japan, which other OEMs have talked to you about. You know, we're not immune to them also. But I didn't want to talk about the first half of FY22. We'll cover that in terms of our Q&A. From a Q4 perspective, you know, we managed these challenges quite excellently within our results, as you would have seen. And our intention is to manage them excellently going forward as well. Next slide. Next slide, please. Okay, outlook. Very similar to what we told you on February the 26th or so. Revenue will be bigger this year than last year. So in FY22, we're already seeing that in the first quarter, of course. Despite the headwinds, the challenges, the supply constraints, we're reconfirming 4% or better EBIT margin for this year. We're reconfirming investments $2.5 billion. And we're also reconfirming cash positive or better than break even, as is referenced here, despite the monies we'll need to pay on restructuring the 500 and some million. All of that will improve through FY24 because our underlying business is stronger than FY22. It's those challenges which will hold us back, and the momentum of that transformation program will clearly build over the next several quarters, and we've got some superb product offerings. MLA High, Range Rover Sport Defender 130 coming at us between those two periods as well. So we're very, very confident of being able to build not only our EBIT, but reduce and eliminate our debt. And I'll remind you, in FY26, our guidance EBIT margin is 10% or better, not up to 10%, 10% or better. And that's what we intend to do. I think I'm back to you, Balaji.
Thank you, Andrea. Next slide, please. Talking about Tata Motors standalone, numbers you've already seen. Call out I would make here is the spread between EBITDA and EBIT starting to narrow as the revenue starts picking up. But on an overall year, despite the pandemic, it grew 2%, the revenue is up 7%, and EBITDA margin improving by almost 380 basis points over last year. So that's a good place to be. And the profit before tax, before exceptional items, that is, of course, we talked about the PV impairment reversal in the exceptional item. But despite that, this quarter was a break-even PBT. Full year, of course, impacted by the first quarter and the second quarter that you saw. Free cash flow, of course, strong for the year, third quarter in a row. And full year also ended on a positive basis, as we had guided earlier. Next slide, please. Same highlight. Maybe I'll just pick up one or two items here. I think the question on CV, if I look at the recovery, starting to move from MNHCV and ILCV. So it's now those things are starting to fire well with higher demand from infra. We're also seeing percentage of MNHCV in our overall portfolio also starting to increase. PV, of course, this is the highest sale that we saw in the last 34 quarters, doing extremely well. EV growing at 215%, so that's a whopping growth that we are seeing on the EV side. EBITDA is the highest in the last 8 quarters, and CV EBITDA within touching distance is the double digit that we talked about in the guidance. And CV EBITDA at 4.9%, well ahead of the break even that we indicated, and the absolute EBITDA highest in the last 10 years. So overall, domestic business has come through well across all the lines. Next slide, please. The call out here, I think every line item with volume mix realization starting to go well. The one that's really a fly in the ointment here is variable cost coming from inflation on commodities that we have seen. And that is, of course, going to be an issue as we go into Q1 as well. And that coupled with lockdowns, I'll talk a little bit towards the end of that one. Fixed cost control continue to be tight, and that's the reason you see a benefit coming as volume's picking up. And overall PBT margin of 3% for the quarter is something that we are quite satisfied with given the conditions. Thanks, sir. Similar to JLR, watch the central box where I think cash profit after tax well ahead of investments and even on a full year basis. So the decision to actually cut back on investment proven right. And at the same time, we are not being pedantic about it. We did dial up the investment, particularly in PV, as we started seeing growth come through. As far as the working capital changes are concerned, most of it from a days perspective, we are reducing our inventory days, we are reducing our debtor days, and we are reducing our creditor days. So a combination of that, despite that, we're starting to see working capital negative continue. And as growth is coming through, you're seeing this number really spew cash. And a hygiene point here, as Q1 with the kind of lockdowns that we're seeing, this will unravel for a while. Until growth comes back again. So that's just the nature of the game that we are currently on to. Next slide. Investments, you've already seen, I don't want to spend more time on this other than to say that we are managing our investing quite prudently in current conditions, focused on products and technology. Next one. This is a 6,000 crore target that we have given ourselves to deliver, and again that we have delivered 9,300. You will notice on the investment line, we did not meet the target because we diverted that money for unlocking growth, which is what you're seeing on the PV side. And on the working capital side, of course, a good number there. Overall market share, that's fine. Don't change. Go back. Overall market shares have been sequentially improving as the year progressed. And we did end the quarter at almost 47% share, which on a YTD basis lands up at 42.4. Draw your attention to the MNHCV market share improvement over the last 4 years. So we've been consistently increasing that share, and almost 400 bits added over the last few years. ILC also continuing to increase its market share momentum as it builds forward. Real call-out will be on small commercial vehicles, where I think they have a task on hand. We did end the quarter strong in terms of pickup and numbers. Sequentially, it has been improving, but clearly that is a number that is not acceptable to us, and we need to ensure that we work on that and deliver against it. Buses, I wouldn't speak too much about, because the salience is completely vaporized, so very little to talk about. And this overall number actually got impacted by the small commercial vehicle salience disproportionately increasing in the first half of the year, and therefore that is what you're seeing as numbers. No excuses, it is just the nature of the game. and therefore we need to do a better job of picking up the small commercial vehicle share, which we are committed to. Next one. Financials, commercial vehicles, clearly the revenue numbers growing at 90% for the quarter. Even on a sequential basis, the numbers starting to increase is good news. EBITDA at 9.1 we talked about, and the gap between EBITDA and EBIT starting to narrow fast. Overall, on a full year basis, the EBIT was break-even, despite the mayhem that was there in the first half of the year, as you've seen the numbers there. Let me hand it over to Girish in terms of how he sees the current quarter and what has happened in the last quarter. Girish, over to you. Next slide, please.
Yeah, thanks, Balaji. So, if you summarize the key points in last quarter, so I think most of the end-use sectors showed a strong recovery. Of course, prior to the onset of the second wave of COVID, I think our BS6 product superiority and the value-added services continue to be well-received by the customers. And as a result, not only did we see sequential market share growth, but also our net promoter score increased for third year consecutively and has now moved from a 65 to 68, so at a high level and continues to grow. We also did well in the non-vehicle business, so we were able to improve our spare parts penetration by almost 500 basis points during the year, which also therefore increased its contribution to the revenue. We also increased the penetration of CTech, our connected truck platform, and I think we have now a penetration of upwards of 90% in medium and heavy trucks. So those were the highlights, and of course we were able to reduce the EBIT break-even by 25% during the year gone by. Coming to the current quarter, of course I think we are now challenged with the second wave of COVID, and there we are focusing on ensuring the dealer health. So we have provided support to the dealers through various initiatives, especially in the area of liquidity, so ensuring that the claims are settled. We are also giving wherever required support on interest on the stock to provide a P&L support. We are supplying vehicles to those geographies and segments where the demand is not yet impacted much, and continue to monitor our pipeline on a daily basis. In terms of customer connect, that continues to be on a digital basis completely now. So all virtual engagement with the customers across all the segments. We've also formulated new set of standard operating procedures and communicated those to all the channel partners. In terms of demand fulfillment, so we are aligning our production to retail. So whatever has been the retail, and one has seen a drop in the retail, and if you see some of the highlights, I think one has seen a drop in diesel consumption, one has seen a drop in the fastags. One has also seen drop in the Vahan registration of the vehicles. So overall, I think the market has dipped, and we have immediately aligned our production to retail starting from the month of April, second fortnight. And we are doing so even in this month. And even this month, I think the production is lower than that of April. So we are ensuring that we are able to break the chain effectively in all the plants by having sufficient shutdowns. And even on the days we are working, we are having just 50% of the manpower. We are, of course, looking at fulfilling the spare parts and international business orders, which continue to be good. But of course, in some of our international markets also, there have been COVID-driven lockdowns. We started maintaining strategic inventory of critical parts, I mean, especially electronic items, which have been in shortfall throughout the last year, and therefore, looking at those. And we also have formed a task force which is monitoring the vendor site operation and health, and also their operational requirements. In terms of cost reduction and cash conservation, we carried forward the learnings from the business continuity plan that we had last year. Direct material cost reductions are being expedited and pulled towards Q1. We have deferred capex as regards our earlier budget or plan. We deferred by almost 30%. All the fixed expense reduction that we had done during the previous year has been put into action again, so that we are able to sustain all the benefits. And the capital allocation has been revised for products with a large part of it now going for BS6 phase 2 programs. So I think that's what we have done, and we align ourselves continuously with the changing market environment through the business agility plan. Back to you, Balaji.
Thanks a lot, Girish. Moving on to passenger vehicles, next slide, please. Two call-outs here. Draw your attention to the growth numbers. Industry declined 2%. We grew by 69% in Tata Motors PV, and the EV business within that grew 218%. So significant shift in numbers there. Market share of 8.2 we talked about. Also, draw your attention to the penetration of EVs in our portfolio, which was 0.2%, is now up to 2%. And likely to increase further as we go forward. So therefore, we do see significant change happening in the consumer segment, and we are very clear at Tata Motors we will lead this EV disruption as far as India is concerned. Next slide, please. Financials, delighted to see the EBITDA numbers consistently improving in the PV business as volumes are starting to come through, mix is improving, and EBIT margins starting to come down as operating leverage leverage kicks in. We believe this trend is now fundamental, coming from the fact that the consumer is clearly looking to break free, and this is a shift towards personal mobility that we are seeing. And within that, our new Forever portfolio is really firing all cylinders. So the consistency in growth that you're seeing is likely to continue. What's happening in Q1 this year is a different discussion, which we'll come to in a short while. So I'll ask Shailesh to talk about it. Shailesh, over to you.
Thank you, Balaji. So second wave of COVID has, of course, adversely impacted both demand and supply side. But the good thing for PV business is that we started the quarter with a very low inventory and a very strong booking pipeline for ourselves. And therefore, while quarter one looks on a decline, we have therefore articulated and operationalized the business agility plan to navigate effectively in this uncertain period. And actions have been developed in three areas, which is on demand creation, fulfillment, as well as profitability. On demand creation, we've seen that because of progressive lockdown in the country since middle of April, it has really impacted the demand side. While in April, the retail and bookings dropped in the range of nearly 40 to 45%, but in May, it is trending at a much steeper drop, with only, I would say, less than 20% of showrooms which are operational. And therefore, demand is expected to be significantly subdued in the quarter one. As far as actions are concerned on the demand creation side, we are closely tracking the regional and segmental changes, if any, on the demand side, and keeping our offtake and production completely aligned to that. We are using digital, given in the lockdown situation. This is what had helped us last year also, leveraging it through platforms like, you know, Click to Drive and Hyperlocal Marketing Initiative to ensure that even in the lockdown period, we are able to keep getting the flow of the bookings. And since we have less than 10 days of inventory at the start of the quarter, and this was due to demand being more than our supply rate, and therefore we are using this month to increase the stock in the channel and bring down the waiting period for our customers, which were pretty high, and therefore this is an opportunity for us. Sorry, on the demand side of on the demand fulfillment side, the supply side got impacted primarily due to the lockdown in all the major auto clusters, especially Maharashtra, I would say. Latest one, our Nasik and Kolhapur cluster, which has badly got impacted. And most of the suppliers are operating at 50% manpower or less. And also semiconductor supply has further deteriorated, is what we have seen in this quarter. While it was a concern in Q4 also, that this quarter it is further deteriorated and a matter of concern for the coming months. And therefore, we are trying to maximize production to fulfill the demand and build strategic inventory. So we are continuing with the production in all our three plants. We had taken shutdown for the first 4-5 days, mainly aimed at enhancing our capacity further for supporting the growth that we have planned for this year, and also certain preventive maintenance actions. On the profitability front, it's going to be impacted by the lower operating leverage and the commodity inflation that we are seeing. and therefore we have initiated tight controls on fixed costs and also accelerated the structural cost reduction effort, which is now pretty much an institutionalized and ongoing initiative for us. And we have also taken price increase, which is in line with the industry, but we are the only players who have also given the price protection to our customers. And that basically has helped us in avoiding any cancellations to the strong booking pipeline that we have. So that's from my side, Balaji. Back to you.
Thanks, Shailesh. Next slide, please. Quick peep into Tata Motors Finance. They ended the year pretty strong. Market share 33, PBT of 266 crores, significantly better than last year. And return on equity, which is the metric that they are doing after, of 9.2%. GNP is also below 5 and NNP is below 4. The key one is the cost income ratio has been tightly controlled. At the same time, focus on collections, where we hit at almost 105% in March. But that's, I really would love to draw your attention to the last two lines out there, where next few months we do expect to see a challenge. And this time it is different, because it's not just about the transportation business that is getting affected. The collection infrastructure, in terms of people who are going out there and getting collecting, we have almost 900 people who have been impacted by COVID, who are people who are feet on street. And unfortunately, we lost 6% in Tata Motors Finance. And therefore, we are wanting to be very careful with respect to our people, and that will definitely have impact on collection efficiencies. We're already seeing it come down quite significantly to almost 80% level last month. And therefore, it's not an easy time out there in the field. And we are working closely with our teams, our customers, our people, to ensure that we alleviate the stress. But it is fair to expect that Q1 is going to be a significant pain, and we are having representing to all the powers that be to find ways to alleviate the stress. So this is going to be a critical quarter for all of us from that perspective. Last slide. Outlook, I think you can see it, but Q1 FY22 will be adversely impacted by lockdown. You heard Adrian talk, you can Girish, Shailesh and myself talk. Clearly impacted by lockdown, semiconductor shortage. We have a couple of woes that's quite full. So a strong end to the year is something that is we were very happy with. But then, of course, Q1, we need to deal with the stress. But we will come through strong, because fundamentals of the business, as you've seen, are very strong. And therefore, this makes us even more resilient in terms of performance, and we will get there. And we are not changing any of our plans in JLR or in TMN, because what we need now is agility, and therefore that is what we are focused on. So with this, let me stop here and hand it back to you guys for questions that you may have.
Thank you, Balaji. We will now start the Q&A session.
Okay.
Wait for a minute.
So would you want to quickly explain Prakash, the process?
Yeah, sure, Balaji. So all the participants on the webcast can use the chat box option appearing at the bottom of their screen to submit their questions to the speaker. We'll wait for a moment while the queue assembles.
Okay, let's get started. First question is from Ruchit Mehta, SBI Mutual Funds. Adrian, this is for you. For JLR, the Q4 implied ASP seems to be lower by 5,000 pounds quarter on quarter. Could you walk us through the cost for the same?
Yeah. Okay. So let me go back to a couple of the points I've made in previous presentations. You know, different markets have different peak periods, different times of the year. Quarter three, actually, you know, that's the peak selling period for China. And therefore, there was a disproportionate value within our China business in Q3. And don't forget, that means SUV4 and SUV5 vehicles, so the highest transacting price vehicles that we sell. Q4 is different. Q4 has a peak selling period in the UK and not such a peak selling period in China. And, of course, UK is about SUV2 and SUV3 vehicles, lower transacting prices, lower gross vehicle revenue and lower margins as well. So you really need to start to look and plot where our peak sales periods are for our peak regions, which will give you a heads up that our average selling price in Q3, unless there's something extreme happening, will always be higher than Q4.
Thank you. Thanks, Adrian. Second is from Pratik Kodar, and I'll take this question. Tata Motors has been very clear that the equity fundraise would be the last resort. Despite such a good performance on both JLR and TML standalone, what is the rationale of thinking for a fundraise? Pratik, you're absolutely right. It remains the last option. There's no change in that particular front. And also, hasten to add there, the board has deferred this decision to a subsequent board meeting. And the reason we had an AGM coming up, and from a flexibility perspective, we wanted to keep all the options open. And that is why we have not been clear in terms of what are the instruments that we will raise and how much will we raise. And that is something that was part of the discussions today. And therefore, the board has decided we'll defer it to a later point in time, given the performance that we have right here. And at the same time, we shouldn't forget that we are in the midst of COVID. There are a fair number of challenges that we have outlined. And the reason we wanted to keep our options open was this, because it's an AGM coming up, and therefore those enabling resolution, if you notice them, to read the notice carefully, we would have specifically put it as an enabling resolution. And that then gives us a good 1 year of not having to go back to the shareholders. But that is, of course, now subsequently from the board, we have decided to defer it. So therefore, that's the background thinking to it. Next question is from Yogesh Agarwal, HSBC. JLR volume growth guidance of better than FY21 seems very conservative, considering the base effect in FY21. Can you please provide more flavor? Would it be a 20% plus kind of a growth?
So you're absolutely right. It is very conservative, and the answer is yes. It will be better than 20% higher than last year.
Okay, Kapil Singh, Nomura. On JLR guidance of FY22 forecast, the company has been reporting JLR EBIT margin of around 7% for the last two quarters. Plus, you will get the benefit of nearly 100 bps from restructuring costs taken in FY21. So why is the guidance so low at 4% plus EBIT margin? What are the key factors that can take the margins down to 4%? Was there any reversal in residual values for JLR? And maybe that's a separate question. Maybe we'll answer this one first, Adrian, and then the next piece.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So let me take you back to half to FY21 to answer the piece. Let me remind you what we've told you so far. We told you Q4 underlying is about 7%. Q4 is always our best quarter. You know that. Our volumes were 123,000 units. So it's closer to an indicator of a normal quarter, but Q4 is normally stronger. Q3, don't forget what I told you, we were 6.7%, but we had a lot of reversals of residual values in VME in Q3, and the result of that, our underlying was a couple of points lower. So I think it's reasonable for you to assume, based off what we've already told you, that our second half performance was close to about 6%. So why 4% plus? Well, a number of factors coming going forward. We don't yet know the level and the scale of impact from the semiconductor challenges that the whole industry faces. Other OEMs have told you specific numbers. We're not going to do that. And the reason why we're not going to do that is because we haven't given up on it. Right? We are working tirelessly to enhance our position every week, every day, every week, and every month. So I don't actually know where we'll end up from a volume perspective in quarter one. What I do know is we're optimizing everything we possibly can. Now, last year in quarter one, we lost 13.5% EBIT margin. We could be EBIT loss in this quarter as well, but it'd be very, very small if we are. So it will impact the full year. Here's the key point here, right? Q1 will impact the full year. However, depending on the speed and the bounce of the industry response and the semiconductor build, I don't know how much of that we will then get back in Q2, Q3, and Q4. What I do know is if we can overcome those challenges, we will be stronger than the 4%. That's why we said higher. So it's speed of recovery for those challenges and whether we can catch back units are the two unknowns today. And I really don't want to mislead you. So I've given you a baseline of 4% or better. And depending on how the industry can respond to semiconductors, the better will get bigger. That's all, Balaji.
Yeah, thanks, Adrian. Second question for you again. Was there any reversal in residual values for JLR and USA in Q4? Do you see more coming through in Q1?
So we did reverse some of the residual values in the US of A. We now made all of those reversals actually within quarter four, so no more to come. However, we did book some reserves in Germany. So the net reversal in Q4 was very low, about 0.2%. That's all. So most of it is done, and we think also with the changes we made in Germany, we've contained and trapped those losses as well. So overwhelmingly, we do not expect VME to be driven by residual value improvements, reductions going forward. What we do expect in this lean market of undersupply and significant demand is our underlying VME to be better than we've actually previously communicated. That was 6% or lower. So we do expect that to continue, particularly with supply shortages. It'll be closer to 5% of the first half is my estimate.
Yeah, thanks. Again, question back to you again. This is from Sachin Thakur, Credit Suisse. Could you help understand the moving parts behind the gross margins of JLR sequentially, quarter-on-quarter, fourth quarter versus third quarter? How much was the impact of higher raw material costs, and what all went into offsetting that, if you could quantify, please?
Yeah, so I'd refer to the response to the first question. Actually, the overwhelming issue is the mix of the vehicles we sell, SUV4, SUV5, Q3, SUV2, Q3, Q4. So even though volume would have increased, we would naturally expect gross margin to fall Q4 over Q3 for those reasons, mix of vehicles and regional strength. We know that commodity prices are increasing. It is not yet having a significant impact on our numbers, on our margins. In fact, Q4, from an overall material cost perspective, was lower as a proportion of gross vehicle revenue than Q3. So limited to date, we have a hedging strategy in place. It will increasingly hit as we go forward, and those hedges roll off over the course of the next 6 to 12 months. If it becomes a particular impact on the data, we'll call it out at that point in time, not in the data today.
Thank you. The next one is from Jinesh Gandhi, Motilal Oswal. Question for India, as we could ask. Can you discuss your fundraising plans with what deferred? Was it including equity? Considering the sustained sharp improvement in both JLR and India, why do we need any fundraising? That's the first question. I think, Jinesh, I've answered that. It was an enabling provision that we took to be safe in this environment. COVID wave two, there's too many things coming at us, so we want to be sure that we have the options with us. It was an enabling provision. And at this point in time, the board has deferred it. Obviously, the strong performance has helped there. We will revisit it if required. So that's the way we're looking at it. Of the 9,300 crores cash savings, how much was the actual cost savings? We have referred to it in slide 37, Jinesh. Cost and profits of 2,200 crores, all of that. How much of this is sustainable? We are seeing it as sustainable because take Girish's mention on break-even reduction. We're down by almost 25% for the commercial vehicles. Passenger vehicles EBITDA improvement also includes savings that are coming through here. But do keep in mind, going forward, we need to take a look at this vis-a-vis the commodity inflation that's coming at us. These become the source of money to manage that inflation that is coming at us. Can you throw light on the product pipeline post-Hornbill? What new models can we expect post-Hornbill? Clearly, that's something that we wouldn't want to discuss it. The right forum for that will be the Auto Expo. Once we have made up our mind as to what we're going to show out there. So we will definitely share it with you. Next question is from Stephanie Vincent from JP Morgan. How much is the semiconductor and raw material issues respectively hitting the FY22 guidance? Adrian, would you want to pick that?
Yeah, I think I have actually already, Balaji, within my 4% or better question, which I covered semiconductors, and within the margin question, which I covered. I covered the raw materials. So nothing to add to previous questions.
Okay. Second is from, the next one is from Basudev Banerjee and the Capital. Why are you saying led by one-off restructuring cost of 500 to 550 million, JLR will be FCF neutral? Aren't you confident of maintaining operating cash flows and capex of 2.5 billion at last couple of quarter levels? The next one is on India. So Adrian, do you want to pick this one up?
Yeah, I'll pick that one up. So, yeah, we are actually confident, but unless I say this, then I have to give you a different set of numbers, right? So the bottom line is our commitment is to reduce net debt, and we won't go backwards. You know, we will have a challenge in quarter one for the reasons already discussed, but we'll get that back over the balance of the year. And net debt was 1.9 billion. March, and we expect at the end of March next year to be slightly lower. But for the moment, our guidance, with the uncertainties we've already mentioned, is maintained as cash flow positive or better than break-even, despite the 500-some million restructuring costs. You take that away, it'll be 500+ million pounds cash flow.
The question is for India. India CapEx outlook for FY 2022. It seems higher than 1,800 crores as guided earlier. Plan for the year is more like 3,000-3,500 crores. The 1,800 was for FY 2021, in the midst of a pandemic where we are filing a business continuity plan. Having seen three quarters of performance, we are very clearly seeing that once the pandemic is out, the lockdowns are out, there is definitely a demand resurgence that happens. And therefore, this time, it's not a business continuity plan. It's a business agility plan. And therefore, we want to be as flexible as we can. Obviously, if the situation dramatically alters, we will not hesitate to go back to the drawing board on this. But at this point in time, we see the current issues are temporary, and therefore, we intend to generate positive cash flows despite those CapEx investments there. And they are going towards products and technologies which are going to aid growth. So we will not be pedantic about putting a number out there. We are watching it and moving it dynamically in line with demand out there. That's how we see it. Next question is from Rakesh Kumar, BNP Paribas. If profitability continues to improve at JLR, is there a possibility that we could increase our CapEx plan to accelerate the reimagined strategy timelines? And what share of sales comes from lease sales in the U.S. and Europe? And what are the peak share of leases we have seen historically? Adrian?
Yeah, okay. So my answer to the first one is unlikely. We've got a real clear plan we're setting out, right? We're making sure that every element of that plan is fundamental to the success of this organization. We don't actually think we've missed anything. Throwing money at this doesn't necessarily speed you up, actually. So the agile approach, the scrums, the sprints, the empowerment, the making sure people are responsible to fixing things first time through, that will speed us up. And we've made a commitment, actually, that overall, in time, we will be 40% faster than we are today. That's a huge improvement, a huge commitment, and that's what we maintain. At the point in time as we go forward, as we eliminate our debt, just as the investor day, as we eliminate our debt and then decide what we wish to do with the cash flow positions, TML friends, Tata Sons friends, and our board will discuss what we wish to do. But the current plan stands, the investment guidance stands as well.
Lease sales, Adrian, what share of lease sales come from lease sales in the U.S. and Europe, and what are the peak share?
Yeah. Well, again, we're overwhelmingly consistent with the rest of the marketplace. So U.S. is our highest lease market, as you would know, followed by U.K. and markets in Europe, mostly Germany. I do have some data in front of me which suggests it's about 80% in North America, but that's consistent with the marketplace.
Okay. Next one is from Ronak Sarda on Systematix. Let's take the JLR pieces first, and I'll do the PB piece later. For JLR, will lower D&A and employee benefits start reflecting from Q1? We have, in a way, gone back to the pre-JAG XD phase. Should we expect JLR will focus mainly on profitable models? Second question. And the last one on JLR, that's an easy one. I'll pick that up. For JLR, can we have an EBIT waterfall instead of a PBT? You already have that in the slide. The bottom line has that, so you can use that in case you need more clarification. Do reach out to her. Back to you, Adrian, for the first two pieces.
Yep. Okay, so let me take D&A first of all. Okay, D&A over the next few quarters will be similar to the second half last year. Don't forget, the MLA mid-vehicles were not available to be introduced in the first half of this year. At the point we would have introduced them, 12, 18 months' time, that's when the reduction in the D&A would have kicked in, of course. D&A will next actually change when we introduce our new models, Range Rover and Range Rover Sport, in 12 to 18 months' time. Employee benefits, as we release those 2,000 people over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, then yes, the cost of people will actually start to fall as well. 100 million a year, we believe, but in a particular quarter, that filters down to 20 or 25 million. So I don't anticipate that to dramatically impact the in-quarter data you will see.
Then on, I think the profitable model piece, as part of Reimagine, has been explicitly called out that we are looking at profitable growth here, and that's how it will be done. So no change in strategy there. Then on PV impairment, yes, these are non-cash costs. The question is are these non-cash costs? Are these reversals non-cash? Absolutely, yes, they are. Moving to the next slide, next topic, Amin Pirani, CLSA. Given that the first Land Rover BEV will come in 2024, do you think it may pose a risk in models such as Evoque and Disco Sport, where competition is already in the process of launching BEV?
We'll have a great Evoque and a great Disco Sport under our EMA platform shortly afterwards. So if it were to, the time to new vehicle delivery is quite short, so that wouldn't be a concern for us.
Okay. Again on JLR, this is from Dinesh, once again Mopilal. JLR realization declined sharply quarter on quarter by 9%. What are the key reasons behind it? I think we've already explained it extensively in the previous question, therefore maybe that's we'll take it as given. Order book of 100K units for JLR. Can you give some flavor on which models, region, and makeup of this order book? Is this due to supply side impact? Are we done with the write-offs to streamline the new normal of the business? And finally, an effective tax rate question as well for FY22.
Okay, let me take them as you've asked them. So the order book, 100,000 units, of late has been growing about 2,000 units a month. You know, the phenomenon in our business that most of those ordering processes happen in the UK and Europe, and that's where 60% of the order book is, less in China and less in North America. That's just a buying phenomena and a logistics phenomena, right? Vehicles have to be there in place because of the pipeline to get them there is so long. So mostly UK and Europe, particular emphasis on our PHEV vehicles. They have had a dramatic impact in the marketplace. Some of those vehicles in some markets in Europe have up to a 12-month waiting list for. So clearly, you know, those customers are going to have to be super patient for us. So ultimately, yes, the answer is it is a result of the supply side. And as we work through some of those supply issues, let me just reference for the moment semiconductors, but there are also PHEV issues, then we would expect those order books to actually start to normalize in 6, 9, or 12 months' time. Are we done with write-offs to streamline the new normal of the business? We believe so. We don't have anything left that we're aware of, right? We really think we've had a strong six-month review of what our strategy is, and we think we've communicated that to you, and we think we've actually, you know, made the adjustments we need to make. And as you would know, our external auditors have been working alongside us for 3 months, and they agree with us. So I don't expect any additional write-offs for any of the elements that we have actually communicated as a part of Reimagine. To date, effective tax rate expected in FY22. Obviously, the tax rate's been pretty damn weird over the last 12 months or so because of losses and allowance of deferred tax assets. As we become more profitable, you know, obviously that deferred tax position will change and we'll be left with a couple of phenomena. We'll be left with a phenomenon called overseas. We expect, obviously, the tax rate will now become profitable overseas, so we will be paying tax, as you would have seen this time around, and we would expect the deferred tax asset to start to normalize the effective tax rate also. I suspect that will happen later this year as our profitability grows in H2.
Got it. So next one from Aditya Makaria, HDFC Securities. Congrats on the market share gains with Land Rover. What is the impact that Tesla is having on the luxury market as the volumes are now 500K? Can you give some color on the same?
Maybe I can take this one, Balaji.
Yes,
Thierry speaking. I think that even if we don't talk very often about competitors in this type of session, the reality of, if you look at Tesla today, is that they are not really in the luxury market. And more, they are less to a certain extent. They started with the high-end premium, and now if you look carefully to the range of cars and associated volumes, you will notice that it's more and more going to the mid-premium, which is giving us a huge space.
Okay, thanks, Yuri. Question from Thakur again. Can you share an update on what's happening with the BMW partnership on EDUs? Thierry was quoted last week by Reuters saying that JLR is exploring with BMW on going closer with the partnership. Can you share anything that is on these areas?
No, we continue to work with BMW, and as such, we are permanently exploring new opportunities. Concerning our, of course, you know, our collaboration on EDUs, it's of course included. But it's clear that we have stopped also our XJBEV, although we retain the IP and our joint ownership.
Thank you. Question from Pramod Kumar, Goldman Sachs. Given the acceleration in pure EV demand led by competition launches and regulatory push, are you comfortable with your EV business? And is there a risk of JLR losing out on demand and customer mindshare on EVs?
Well, I think what is key, and Adrian answered in that spirit as well for one of the previous questions, is to be on time against the real demand from our customers. And today, the real demand of our customers is very much on PHEV, as you understood. So we are glad about that. And at the same time, we are glad to see that the BEV starts really to take off worldwide. And that's why we are fine with our timeline. For sure, we are clearly, and we enjoy the fact that with our refocused plan, we can see an acceleration of our processes in the company to seamlessly and excellently deliver what we promised, and we are going to make the best use of that.
Thank you. Question, maybe this is for Girish and Shailesh. In terms of, can you please guide for India's CV and PV growth outlook? How do you see it given COVID second wave impact on semi-urban and rural India? Girish, you want to go first, and then Shailesh, you want to take it up next?
Yes, Balaji. So, in the last analyst call, I think we had indicated a TIV of almost 750,000 to 800,000 for FY22, in which we had projected a Q1 being at around 170,000. And I think at the end of March and more so in the month of April, we have come across this COVID second wave, which has indeed created a slowdown in the demand. And as we got into May, I think the slowdown has been even more as many states have gone into lockdown. And in April, we have seen that the total industry volume has been just 40,000. So I think to give a clear projection for the entire year, we need to see how the states unlock, which is something that we are monitoring on almost on a daily basis. So as the states unlock and the freight starts moving in the country and get back to the pre-COVID levels, I think we should be in a position to indicate what's likely to happen. So at this juncture, it is very difficult to provide a firm outlook, although there could be some scenarios as to when the economy gets back to the pre-COVID level. But as we stand here now, that is difficult that we are able to, we'll be able to get this 35-37% total industry volume growth that we had indicated. For the exact number, maybe we'll have to wait for the next analyst call. Balaji?
Yeah.
I'll just take this. Typically in PV business, the rural to urban ratio has been 40% rural and 60% urban. Last year, it was slightly tilted towards rural, where it gained the share by 1 or 2%. So far in this year, we have seen that April is the only month where we saw that rural was slightly higher, and that was primarily on account of the lockdown enforcement being a bit weaker in rural areas as compared to urban. But the jury is out in terms of how this whole ratio is going to play out as far as rural is concerned. But clearly, we would expect that rural would stabilize around 40% only this financial year also. As far as overall projection for PV industry is concerned, was supposed to be in the range of 3.2 to 3.4 as per the earlier estimate before we were aware of the COVID second wave. This might decrease by 250,000 to 300,000 as a one scenario that is being projected. But if the pent-up demand which is getting built in these 2-3 months as well as, you know, one is seeing that the shift towards personal mobility might become even more stronger, given that the customers are expecting multiple waves of COVID, and therefore there is greater concern about their well-being, and therefore there might be a bigger personal mobility shift phenomena that one might see. And therefore, one can still imagine that this can be recovered, whatever losses that we are going to see in Q1. But as far as rural is concerned, we would still think that rural will remain around 40% of whatever demand we see in the PV industry. As far as Tata Motors is concerned, since last year, our mix is more favoring towards urban, given that the young and urban customers are getting more, excited with the expressive design and the safety aspect. This is being more appreciated in urban centers. So that has been as far as the Tata Motors PV business is concerned. Back to you.
The question is on from more on any timeline you can share on your JV plan for the India car business. So far, no decision has been taken on this promote. As and when something comes up, we will definitely share it with you. Question, this is on chip shortage. Can you give some more color on the chip shortage? How long would this last? How do we plan to mitigate the same? And also, does this affect our rollout plans in the future?
Thierry, do you want to pick this up? Yeah, I can take that one, of course. I will not repeat the comment from Adrian, which were clear enough, I believe, on the shortage in terms of impact. I think it's important to say that during the first part of this crisis, the team did an incredible job to mitigate that risk, to the extent that the impact, I think, on the Q4 of last fiscal year was about 7,000 units, which was quite limited without big consequences on our strong figures, as you could see. But, you know, from a crisis, you always learn and you find opportunities. And for us, what I'm learning and with the team is about our Tier 2 and Tier 3, our microprocessors suppliers, and the way they work, the way they operate, and at the end of the day, what's happening is that we need a change in the way we're operating our supply chain with them, and it's exactly what we are preparing at the moment to have a structural fix to this problem.
Thank you. Gupta, would you want to just give us a color on the implication of that? In the...
My pleasure. As already mentioned earlier by Girish and Selesh, in the fourth quarter, because of the dedicated and the dedication, the commitment of the teams in PV and CV, although we had certain shortages, we could actually prevent supply impacting our delivery position in order to give us the chance to actually meet the strong demand, as already highlighted. As we expected that it couldn't get worse and felt pretty comfortable having the situation to a certain extent under control. The situation has already, as mentioned by Selesh on the one slide, has worsened to the extent that we see across the board significant constraints where we are now working with the team based on the database established in the fourth quarter, more or less on a daily way on the mitigation of the impact on production. What does it mean? We have actually looked deep into the ECUs in order to understand which kind of chips from which kind of supplier were actually used by our first tier suppliers. And in order to see whenever there is a constraint, which of those and therefore which kind of components or modules could be impacted, we started to establish direct contact with the chip suppliers, although we are not contractually linked with them. But since we have established relationships from the past, it also helped to ensure that our demand got prioritized, got met, and parts were made available by the chip suppliers to our second and first tier suppliers, in order to have transparency in the first instance and to the largest possible extent, also full control of the situation. Nevertheless, as already indicated by Thierry, the situation at Tata Motors is not different to the one at JLR. It's a daily struggle, and it requires lots of detailed review work effectively on a daily basis by the team. in order to keep the supply chain going and to limit the impact. Nevertheless, we expect the situation, as mentioned, will get worse in the first quarter. We expect some kind of an improvement in the second quarter, but it's also because of the fact, as mentioned by Girish and Selish, that we have started to actually build some stock because of some of the shutdown days we have experienced in the last couple of days because of the COVID situation in India. So that we hope that we can actually get back to full production in the moment we get out of the lockdown. We echo what is generally the expectation of the industry, that as of the second half of the fiscal year, we are going to see a gradual improvement of the situation. To what extent, I think it would be too early and would be too much of a kind of crystal ball approach to say as of October we are going to be safe. But we expect at least a gradual relaxation of the situation on the way forward.
Thank you. Thanks, Gunther. Question from Chirag Shah, LY. JLR commodity cost. How does commodity contract work? Annual, semi-annual? Also, how does the commodity hedging, is it different from revenue hedging? And if you break raw material cost into commodities and value add, how much will the commodity percentage be of the total RMC? Adrian?
It's Ben, the treasurer at Jaguar Land Rover, so I'll pick that question up. So I think on the first piece of it, how does the commodity contract work? So I think it's different across different commodities, and so it's really difficult to answer that question in the context of this event. I think on the second question around how is commodity hedging different, I think one thing I'd say is generally the horizon is shorter. So on FX, we go out 4 to 5 years. In practice with commodities, we're really only going out about 2 years in quite a bit reduced percentage in the second year. I think the other thing that's worth mentioning is the hedge accounting is different. So we have hedge accounting for the FX, so essentially both the P&L impact of the hedge and the cash flow both occur when the hedge matures. In the case of commodities, actually, there's not hedge accounting, so there's an immediate mark-to-market, which comes through our P&L, and that's why you see that tend to see that number in our profit bridges, but then the cash only flows when the contract actually matures. So there is a difference between the timing of the cash flow and the profit. And then I think on the last one, just what is raw material cost as a percentage of RMC, I don't have that number at the tips of my fingertips, but what I generally say is it's a second-order kind of number. I think that the commodities is a total value of components that we buy is smaller than you would think. Just for an example, in Q4 year over year, commodities was worth 19 million pounds unfavorable despite the significant move in commodities that you've seen.
Thank you, Ben. And I think the second part of the question, can you assume from here on there won't be any extraordinary charges, which I think Adrian has already answered. Let me take a question from Pramod, the Input Capital. JLR VME is reduced by 250 bps year on year. Can you sustain it, considering RR changeover is in the coming quarters? How does demand pull help you here? The second for Tata Motors, they'll pick it up. Adrian?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So with the health of sale approach, with our taking out, deliberately reducing dealer stocks, I think we took you a lot through that detail through the previous two presentations. That continues to be our intent. You know, we were surprised by the scale of the impact of the marketplace and the speed of that impact. And it's certain that when we have, you know, more supply concerns than demand concerns today, that VME over that period of time will be at levels lower than I previously indicated. Hence why I've said earlier, expect in the first half a number close to 5% rather than the 6% underlying we were at previous to that. As we grow back demand, then we'll see how the marketplace responds later in the year. But in the first half of this year, it will be certainly lower than the 6% guidance I've previously given for sure.
Thank you, Adrian. Second, I'll take it. This is on collections in Tata Motors Finance. There are two questions on that. Two people have asked the same question. How is it performing post the COVID? As I said in the presentation, we ended the March quarter at 105% kind of collection efficiency. This has obviously come down to more like about 82-83% in the month of April, and we're expecting this to go down even further. So it will be a painful quarter for Tata Motors Finance as they navigate this, because the issue is not about just cash flows. It's also about feet on street and infrastructure. So we are working through this, and expect this comes back on track at the earliest, obviously ensuring safety of our people. The second question is on growth of CV, which I think Girish has already answered. The second question I answered. Girish, the question is more to you and Shailesh. Price increases taken in CV and PV so far this year. How much of that RM impact is likely in Q1? Do you want to pick it up, Girish and Shailesh?
Yes, Balaji. So, see, we've already taken a price increase of around 1 to 1.5% on 1st January of this calendar year, which is Q4 of FY21. And then on 1st April, we took another increase of 2.5% across all the models, which is this quarter. So that's the kind of price increase we've already taken. In terms of raw material impact for first quarter, I think it can be divided into two groups. One is the precious metals, which goes into after treatment. So that is more internationally linked, and therefore that is kind of going up, and we have a 6-monthly contract there. The second one, of course, is the steel, which is although linked to the international prices, is also dependent on domestic consumption. And as of now, with the auto demand going down, we are yet to have any dialogue in terms of the steel price increase. So that's the situation on the commodity cost in this quarter. Shailesh?
Yeah, so I think the second part of the question, the response would be the same for PV. As far as the price increase is concerned, in Q4 of FY21, we have taken about 1.6% weighted average price increase. And then in May, we have taken additional 1.8% weighted average price increase. Back to you, Varun.
Thank you. Maybe it's time for one last question. This is from Nishant Vaz. Adrian, coming your way. Can you shed some light on the CJLR business improvement plan? What's the timeline for EBIT break-even for that business?
Yeah, of course, Balaji. I mean, if you look at the data, and I'm back to the charts, I should have called it out, actually. The year-over-year chart does show quite a dramatic improvement last year over the previous year. I think the number is 99 million improvements. You'll see that. So my first response is it's already happening. It's already happening. The health of CJLR is starting to improve. It's nowhere near where we wish it to be. You know what? The semiconductor shortages in CJLR will teach us a lot of things, because, you know, a lot of our turnaround model in the import business actually was a result of deliberately constraining the pipeline, a huge improvement in transacting values, reduced VME and gross margin. Some of that may be enforced on us over the next few months. We'll see how the market responds. We hope the market responds favorably there. And the other side of this is the power of the charge program, which we talked about as well last time to you. We've now introduced the charge program formally to CJLR, working alongside our Cherry partners and colleagues. And, you know, we'll just be tougher on spend, right? We'll just be tougher on spend, because there's still opportunities for structural cost reduction in CJLR. So you think about how we've applied charge within Jaguar Land Rover, a resetting of 8 years of our structural cost base. We haven't done that yet within CJLR. So there's lots of opportunity. It takes a bit more time because we have to bring our partners along with us, of course. But I do expect us going forward to find ways to actually improve our viability, profitability in CJLR. But it was a dramatic turnaround in the previous 12 months, so please, we shouldn't pass that point by.
Thank you. So with this, I think we're on the dot, 8 o'clock here. So thanks, everybody, from TML and JLR side, and more importantly, thanks, everybody, who attended the call, taken the time to attend the session and understand our results. Much appreciated. Do stay safe and sound, and wish you all the very best to you and your families in the coming days. Thank you, and look forward to speaking to you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Tata Motors Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.